Okay, let's call the meeting to order. I just wanted to point out, in honor of Valentine's Day, you guys get mini truffle cakes with hearts on them. And I'll have to point out that a similar recipe once won second prize at the state fair.
Madam Chair, thank you. I don't appear to be rude. I'm not going to have it. I had oral surgery earlier this week, so I'm going to have to pass. Doing so because they don't look delicious. They certainly do.
Thank you.
Yeah. My mouth is frittle and I'm here for you. Do that.
Okay, excellent. Okay, we're beginning. Commissioner Bedra, Madam Chair, and members, I'm here on behalf of the Department of Administration. I'm Dana Badgerow, the Commissioner. We're here this afternoon to present the Governor's budget recommendations from our department. I have with me Nikki Giancola, our Assistant Commissioner for Facilities. Just by way of general introduction, there's really nothing terribly new in our recommendations this year. You've heard them for the most part before. We are bringing back the MnDOT facade. We are bringing back the acquisition of property on the Capitol campus. We also have a recommendation with respect to the Capitol. So with that, I'm going to turn it over. I'll be here for questions and for general policy issues, but Ms. Giancola is going to lead the discussion. Okay. Okay. Chair members, Nikki Giancola from the Department of Administration. I just thought I'd start off. The next slide is the recapture of admin's mission and goals. I thought I would offer to that as many of you know, admin offers a variety of services to all of the state agencies. And with regard to facilities, we believe we have both a leadership and a stewardship role to play in ensuring the wise use, allocation, and maintenance of our buildings and to support sustainable investments in new facilities. Our approach to the 2008 capital planning process is very similar to prior years. We're concentrating heavily on preservation of assets and life safety issues, but we were also mindful of opportunities that would align with the state strategic plan for locating state agencies as well as program needs of other state agencies. What we did in that process was we evaluated previous capital proposals. We had extensive discussions between the various facilities organizations and the admin, the plant management division, as well as real estate and construction services, who oversees construction planning and leasing for the state. And we also had many conversations with other state agencies regarding their capital needs. We went through a prioritization process to do that. First of all, we categorized our projects into a variety of different areas, things that we are seeing as mandatory having to do with life safety issues or security emergencies. We looked hard at asset preservation as we always do. We took a look at things that would provide further efficiencies and better improve reliability and anything that would maybe be a revenue generator for us. And then finally, we looked at new construction type opportunities. So what you see here is our listing of our primary capital factors that back that up. This is just a quick overview of the five projects that we'll be presenting today. As Mr. Badgerell mentioned, we start off with two that have been introduced in the 2007 session. We also have state capital building and asset preservation requests for that. Statewide CAPRA is a normal biennial budget or capital budget request on behalf of all state agencies that admin makes the request. And then the final one is a request for a pre-designed foreign emergency operations center. I will start off with the transportation building exterior. I think since they're all different projects, I think we'll have questions as we go along. So, Representative Lee.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, Ms. Giancola. First, I had the honor of appearing in front of your uncle down at the Ramsey County Jail last week. And he said he doesn't get
from
to see...
From the inside of the outside.
Yeah, I was in jail. No, I was prosecuting morning arraignments. And he said he doesn't get to see his niece enough, so he sends his regards. Okay. And with respect to the location of state agencies, as a member from St. Paul, I hear from downtown building owners a lot that they would very much like state agencies located in their buildings, which have some of the lowest lease rates in the metro area. So are we proceeding forward with that in mind as a policy for the department administration?
Madam Chair and Representative West, it's certainly a consideration. Obviously, our real estate and construction services division, they're watchful over all of the state leases or most of the state's leases. Certainly the ones that are in downtown St. Paul are under their purview. They are working with the agencies that are in those locations. They have a process whereby prior to a lease renewal, they are talking with the agencies. They do a lot of discussion around cost-benefit analysis between, you know, being in owned space, what do we have available, what does their lease terms look like. But all of that is rolled into a very solid program process that they go through with each of the agencies. So I don't know it's as much of a policy decision. It's a lot of things coming together, and each project is looked at individually.
Madam Chair, if I might, and Representative Bush, it is a competitive process when we have an agency that is looking for to relocate or whose lease is coming to a conclusion, and we are in negotiations now currently with to retain the Public Safety Department in downtown St. Paul, as that proposal was successful. Generally speaking, if the lease rates are really, really favorable, they will be winning competitive bids, and we certainly will. We're always looking, of course, for the best possible value for the state. Downtown St. Paul does represent extreme value for us.
Commissioner Badgero, there's one point I would like to make, which I picked up after I made the mistake of going last week to a very good hearing that Representative Hilty had on peak oil and the problems that we're going to have with transportation expenses. And one of the things that we've consistently talked about, we've kind of given lip service to it in statute, and we've also given lip service to it in bonding requests, is the consideration of telecommuting to restrict our dependence on actually having people sitting in their seats from 8:30 to 4:30 every day. And I'm going to start getting serious with that. And, I think it's just, in the bonding request, I think it's a box that people just check off, saying that they have considered it without ever considering it. With the discussion with one department, that order would be just perfect for telecommuting. They admitted that they're not hardly doing any of it, and the reluctance comes from a couple of places, from supervisors who aren't used to it, from other employees and so forth. And particularly, I think the issue of that, we've got to be smart enough with all the things we've done to have a way of measuring productivity of people besides measuring their seat time. And so I don't have the language in front of me right now, but be ready for something that puts some teeth into what we've done before.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and we agree with you. We think we should be emphasizing telecommuting to a greater degree.
Well, you will.
Madam Chair, thank you. Ms. Dean Cole and Commissioner Badgero, hello. It's really become a tight-knit group here at State Gov Finance, maybe due to lack of interest. I don't know, we're such a small budget item. But I did have a serious question about this transportation building exterior. Obviously, this issue has been around like a canker sore here for a long while. And, you know, $18 million in climbing is a good amount of money, no doubt. There's also abatement orders out there. There's also an insurance hazard and litigation issue out there. I have two questions, Madam Chair. The first question for Commissioner Badgero, I think, what is the backup plan if you lose your certificate of occupancy or you find you can no longer get insurance for the MnDOT building? Do you have a backup plan to go somewhere else if something like that happens?
Madam Chair and Representative Villaforest, it's just an outstanding question. We do not have a relocation plan for all of the occupants of the MnDOT building, and certainly we are under threat of losing that certificate of occupancy if we don't remediate. We believe that the measures that we have taken presently, which are temporary in nature and cost $700,000, are temporarily satisfactory, and the Department of Labor and Industry and City of St. Paul have indicated that so long as we are continuing to push for and aggressively seeking this funding that we need, they will not take the certificate of occupancy, but it is a real risk. It has been our number one priority for the Department of Administration for the last 5 sessions. It has been included in bills year after year that have either not passed or have been vetoed and did not make it through the legislative process. So we put this project above all others, any other kind of initiative that our department has sought for the last 5 years, and so we're back again. The cost does in fact continue to grow. This recent cost is the result of a much more detailed set of specifications and proposals from the industry, so we are reasonably assured that this is a good cost, but unfortunately it does continue to grow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just had one follow-up question for the Commissioner. Given the $18 million price tag, are we close or far away from the viability of considering an alternative, such as going to a leased building and just abandoning the building and raising it, or even looking mm-hmm. to build a new one? Are we close to that, or still far away in terms of not only the raw dollar amount, but obviously there's a practical feature in there as well about taking all that equipment and human capital and moving it from point A to point B?
Sure, Madam Chair, and Representative De La Forest.
Commissioner.
We do have a fairly extensive sunk cost in the renovation of the interior of that building. So if you actually go within the walls, you'll find that the electrical, the mechanicals, the new elevators, the code compliance, sprinkling, has all been relatively recently updated to the tune of many, many millions of dollars. So I think if we were to do a cost-benefit analysis, we would find, I'm sure, that it is still to our advantage to renovate the exterior. And again, it's a daunting task to think about the attempt to find a location for that many people elsewhere, and not without extensive cost. Just to move them is, in and of itself, a significant cost.
Okay, let's continue.
Okay. I'm not sure where to go. I maybe describe for any of you that might be new to this, the problem with the DOT building is on the facade. It's on the exterior. The structural support system that holds the granite panels to the building is failing, and the proposal here would be to replace that entire structural support system and abate the asbestos that is behind it in sealants and building components and rehang the panels. The root cause of the problem is rust on the structural support steel. That rust is growing, and it is pushing the panels up and against one another to the point that we have recovered a number of spalled pieces off the building. As we've talked about here, we were pressed into putting together some safety measures in 2007 to protect the employees and visitors around the building, as well as to maintain the occupancy of the building. As Commissioner Badgero mentioned, this is the 6th request for the project, and we believe that it would be between a 12 and 18 month, possibly 24 month construction time period to take care of the building. The latest cost estimate is based on a full set of construction documents. That is different from last year. It is based on general contractor input and assessment, so this is as close as we're going to get to a bid cost short of going out to bid. The next couple of slides are just showing in visual what's going on here. This particular slide is showing a typical of the spalling that's occurring on all sides of the building, but it's occurring at nearly all of the horizontal joints that are located where these shelf angle steel pieces are. The discoloration of the stone is further evidence of the rusting. This next one, if you look at that bottom photo, this is probably one of the most dramatic visuals of the corrosion that's going on. This happened to be exposed in the North Stair Tower last year. This is one of the steel columns that is supporting the curtain wall. Thankfully, we have redundancy built into that North Stair Tower. But on that bottom photo, you can literally take your hand and pull the rust away. So that that is showing the extent of the deterioration there. The next slide is showing that top photo is somewhat of a confirmation that no gap exists anymore between many of the panels. This is significant because it places internal pressure on adjacent panels and it's pushing them beyond their material strength. The rust pack, that is what we refer to, is shown on the bottom photo there, and that is a significant deterioration from previous reports. That's taken from the penthouse. So we are now doing visual inspections monthly. One of the, maybe if we go to the next slide, you can see the protective measures that are in place there. That bottom photo is trying to demonstrate these panel sensors that we have on the building. If you look closely, you'll see those. They look like a little vise, but they're monitoring panel movement. In the middle there, we're showing the lower level roof protection, and then at the top, we're showing the entryway protection.
Just one question that's, suppose, you know, and the more you listen to this, it just seems unconscionable that this is the 10th year that this is appearing before us, or close to that. I guess we have more than bonding bills every 2 years. But suppose we do all this exactly to the maximum and get it all done. Have we solved the problems that caused these problems to develop, or will this occur again in the next 40 years or whatever, whenever this building was built?
Madam Chair, I would categorize that as we will have solved it. One of the issues on this particular building, for some reason, the panels had been caulked, and it was retaining moisture, and that really is the root cause of the rusting of the steel. Obviously, our repair is taking that into account, and as well as we're using not raw steel, but stainless steel as the fix.
But I'm not sure if that's an issue. So if we do all this stuff, we won't have to do it again in 50 years?
We shouldn't have to, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, thank you. Commissioners, just a couple questions. Obviously, there's some minimal detail work. Is this project ready to go?
Yes, this project is ready to go. As I mentioned, we have gone to the extent of going through construction documents, which is not usually typical in a project, but we had to keep this thing moving, so we've gone to that extent. It is ready to go when the appropriation is made.
One follow-up question?
Yes.
Have you looked at other options as far as solar paneling or more environmentally friendly type heating or any other type of environmentally friendly systems for the outside of the MnDOT building?
Representative, it's a great question. What we're planning to do actually is reuse the granite. I mean, that is a sustainability piece. We're hoping that is going to work. Obviously, it's going to be a matter of when we take them down, how well they're going to hold up. What we also plan to do is bid this with options such that we would allow general contractors to give us, if there is a more cost-effective solution than reusing the granite panels, we would see that come back in the competitive bid process.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Christine Cole, our Commissioner. Do you recall when this first arose what the bonding request was to deal with this problem?
Madam Chair, obviously the scope has changed. I know that the first request for the facade of the MnDOT building was in the 2002 time frame, and at that point the request was $5 million. but the scope wasn't anywhere comparable to what it is today. An emergency repair was made on the building on the south side in 2001, which led to the estimate of $5 million in 2002. I don't have the exact scoping here, but where that went from in 2002 to now, it was steadily escalating. In 2004, the request was $8.7 million. In 2005, it was $9.3 million. In 2006, it was $10.2 million. When we got to 2007, we had what we considered the most thorough condition assessment for the building. At that point, the price tag on it was $12.7 million. That was short of having a general contractor take a look at it. It was just A&E-type estimating. But that's kind of a brief history of where the request went. As I said, this is the sixth one, and this is the most broad in scope that we've had.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. Well, Ms. Giancola, when you're talking about the scope, are you saying that if you had gotten the original $5 million and proceeded with what you intended at that point, that that would not have solved the problem?
Madam Chair and Representative Sophie, no, that is not what I'm characterizing there. The $5 million, I wasn't here at the time, but based on the condition assessments at the time, there was a scope of work. I know for sure that it didn't include the penthouse. It didn't include the stack panel area of the lower portion of the building. It did not include the north stair tower. It's just been steadily deteriorating, and we've been doing condition assessments on the building, I believe, annually since that time, and more scope is being added as more is discovered. But that $5 million did not represent the scope today, and it would not have taken care of the problem. We wouldn't have gotten at all of it, and what was left would have continued to deteriorate.
Okay. Moving on to the next topic.
Okay. Property acquisition. This is a request that we made in 2007 as well. What this is about is funding of in the amount of $2.325 million to purchase a piece of property that has that will be available at 639 Jackson Street. It is currently the Central Park United Methodist Church. We, in 2006, were approached by the church or just notified. The state has first right of refusal on three of the parcels that make up that piece of property. They notified us of their intent to sell, and we entered into an agreement with them, subject to funding, to purchase the property. Now, probably the next slide would be good to go to here just so that you're familiar with the site. It is kind of sandwiched between the staff and building and the 14th Street ramp there. It's bounded by Jackson and 14th Street there. As I said, the church is certainly willing to work with us on it. We have some funding that has been encumbered from prior year's appropriations for property acquisition. And short term, the thinking here would be that the building would be removed and we would replace it with a parking lot for visitors. At that end of the Capitol complex, we have a tremendous need for visitor parking. The Office of Administrative Hearings, the Department of Revenue, the Departments of Agriculture and Health all have communicated to us that at times they do have issues with parking in that area, particularly for their visitors. When the Office of Administrative Hearings moved to the Stassen building, that was another concern. They have heavy visitor use. And so in the short term, that's what the use would be. Long term, we see this as a site for great future state development. So it's a kind of a moment in time opportunity to purchase a scarce piece of Capitol complex land.
Ms. Giancola, I see in looking at the project narrative, you've got over a $2.3 million roughly a rough request, plus another $855,000 that's been encumbered. So that
those monies are combined to reflect the amount of money that you wish to have available to effect the purchase, correct?
Madam Chair and Representative, yes, that's correct.
And then if I'm hearing you correctly, Madam Chair and Ms. Giancola, then there is some thought about developing the property that will entail some additional costs, perhaps raising the church building itself or something. I guess what I'm asking quite frankly is what do you anticipate the development cost to be on top of the acquisition cost?
Madam Chair and Representative, I don't have that exact breakdown, but I will tell you that raising the building, resurfacing the property there is part of this request.
Okay.
Development beyond that hasn't been taken into consideration here. Short term, we use it for surface parking. Long term development.
Okay.
The next project is an asset preservation request for the State Capitol building. This is in the amount of $15.4 million. $13.4 million of that is meant to address critical repair and maintenance issues associated with the Capitol, and $2 million is for continued design and planning toward the full restoration of the building. As I said, the $13.4 million is to address the most pressing and critical needs of the Capitol. Those include site work to stabilize and address deterioration of the plaza areas, and replace crumbling tile at several of the balconies on the Capitol, and as well as repair the east and west side stairs. We would also look at the building exterior in terms of repairing leaking roof areas, do dome tuck pointing, and replace dome windows. It would include mechanical and electrical infrastructure renewal and replacement, particularly of air handling units. We have some 28 air handling units in the building, and what we would do is work toward replacement of the ones in either most imminent risk of failure or deterioration. And then finally, we would do building interior work on emergency lighting, replacement of selective rain meters, rain meter and plumbing pressure testing, and doing some work on the Rathgeller and Rotunda air quality. At this point, I'd just like to point out we seem to come with props in this committee, but we have something that I think is a very graphic demonstration of what is likely occurring within the walls of the Capitol. In front of me is a rain meter that I refer to. This is a 6-inch diameter pipe. Our plant management folks were able to pull this out of the judicial dining area in the lower level, the very lowest level of the Capitol. What this does, and there are, I think, 20-some rain meters running throughout the walls of the Capitol, they carry water, rainwater from the roof down through the building. If all of the rain meters in the Capitol are in this condition, we are living with risk here. But that is, I would say, our most urgent need is to take a look at that, take a look at the roof areas that are leaking. This is strictly an asset preservation request, so this fits that. It would just hold and take care of, like I said, the most critical and pressing needs that we're aware of in the Capitol, as well as do some investigative work to find out what's going on systems.
Any questions?
Thank you. Madam Chair, I might if I could just interject with respect to the planning money, just to remind this committee, last year at the end of session, there was a provision passed that formed a working group consisting of House and Senate members, other occupants of the Capitol, Department of Administration, Historical Society, members of the disability community, and the CAP Board. We met a number of times under the leadership of Senator Langseth and Representative Hausman, trying to work toward a compromise solution for the renovation of the State Capitol. We met throughout the fall and were unable to come to a conclusion, to a consensus as to what that renovation ought to look like, its scope, its timing, its cost, and so that work is undone, so to speak.
the $2 million that the governor is requesting here would be for additional planning money to continue to look at options, both for the Capitol itself as well as for the location of the current tenants of the Capitol who will be dislocated when there is final renovation of the air handling units, for example, as well as an overall Capitol campus master plan, which Representative Hausman in particular, Representative Lanning, has requested. Our next project is our biennial request for capital asset preservation and replacement.
Thanks. Commissioner Badgero, before we move on regarding the capital restoration project, I see that the agency request was nearly $64 million, but the governor's request was significantly less than that. And I'm not looking for a line-by-line sort of narrative, but I think it's important that the committee understand, from your perspective, what we're leaving behind if even we went forward with the governor's request. Because this, as you know, is an issue that has, well, it's befuddled me, Madam Chair, because in all the time I've spent in this committee, I've never heard anybody doubt the merits of restoring the Capitol, yet somehow it seems we can never, ever find even a penny to bond for this and move forward on really what is our joint responsibility, our collective responsibility to keep the building in decent shape. So I want Commissioner Badgero, the committee, to be certain, because we're going to pass recommendations, as you know, on to the full Capital Investments Committee, and we need to know, and I want the record to reflect, what we might be leaving behind. In other words, I'll tell you, you know, I am tempted on behalf of our caucus, I'll talk to you folks, to ask for the $64 million. And tell me what we're going to get in general compared to the $15 million, because I really want to try and push this issue again, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, Representative DeLaForest, if we'll go back to last year, we had, within the Department of Administration, having been funded for a design development, hired an architect after a competition who came up with a plan for a complete renovation of the Capitol, which would have totaled $260 million. To be funded over two phases, 130 and 130. That complete renovation would have solved all of the issues of the Capitol, including all of its aging mechanicals, its facilities, its visitor facilities, its security issues, its handicapped accessibility, providing additional space for Senate and other offices, and was, in my mind, quite ingenious plan, in fact, for solving all of the issues, including avoiding the necessity for swing space for the House or Senate to have to move out. It provided a 500-seat large meeting space. It provided additional hearing rooms and so forth. But for whatever reason, and varieties of reasons, that plan was not accepted. So the working group found that, first of all, the initial price tag was rather hard to swallow, $130 million. So the working group asked the Department of Administration to go back and look at alternatives for phasing and funding. And that is exactly what we did. We came back with a four-phased plan, which for the moment avoided the issues of some of that space allocation that seemed to be so sensitive between the House and Senate, but allowed us to get started. It allowed us to dig the vaults at the south side of the Capitol, to begin to prepare for the mechanicals. It had a whole host of other things that would have allowed us to get started. Actually, we should probably do a complete presentation, if you like, on what that $63.9 million would have bought you. But it did, in fact, phase it out over 8 years instead of six, so it was a four-phase plan, and it ended up costing over $300 million when you do that because of escalation. So that was an alternative plan that was put in front of the working group, and it became the Department of Administration's recommendation to the Department of Finance and the Governor's Office, which then was morphed into this particular recommendation.
And the Senate's so mad because we keep trying to take their parking spaces, I think. The decision, I hope, Commissioner Badgero, if you haven't, the Capital Investments Committee has taken a tour of the dungeon area over there in the Capitol and seen the gerbils running on the treadmills to keep the lights on and everything. And certainly do. And Madam Chair, if the committee has time, I think a presentation at some future point would be beneficial. But
I think that's up to you. Representative Lofton is also going to talk about this issue.
There is one other issue, Madam Chair, if I might. Probably there are many other issues, but one that's certainly worth noting, which is that LRT, as it comes down University Avenue and as it is perceived and is approved, passes right to the north of the Capitol, and it tucks right up snug against that sidewalk. It will effectively foreclose our access to the north side of the Capitol for vehicles, for deliveries, and so forth. And once that LRT line is laid, it will greatly complicate the renovation of the north side of the Capitol, including any work that we would do in the vault at the north side of the Capitol. So there's a kind of a timetable here working against us, depending, of course, on the future of LRT. But as it is currently planned, it is a forcing function, I think, in terms of how we think about the renovation of the Capitol. We at least ought to be taking it into account.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As I recall, part of the discussion between House and Senate was the concern that if we went forward with a complete restoration of the Capitol, you essentially, as I think all the Senate minority would move offices to the Capitol, and the State Office Building would become kind of the repository entirely of the House of Representatives. I think the thought was that the two buildings functionally are the same, that there is the work of the legislature, at least, is performed in both spaces, and then if you don't take into account the renovation or staging needs of both buildings, you're not really adequately addressing the capital renovation itself. As part of the planning and this work group, et cetera, can you give us an update on kind of where that thought process is?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Winkler, I think that's what led to the sentiment that we ought to have more of a master plan, more of a comprehensive look at the future of other buildings on the Capitol complex, including, of course, the State Office Building. It is true that there were issues with respect to the moving of the senators over to the Capitol. We avoided or attempted to avoid that and defer that until that planning could be done by this initial phase, which simply addressed mechanicals and other issues, did not address that office space. It is true that if we were to move the minority senators, it would free up 40,000 square feet in this particular building, whose future would be undetermined. But the fact remains that there is not enough room in the Minnesota State Capitol for even its current occupants, much less once we put in the new mechanicals, there will be not nearly enough room. We will need to find additional space somewhere. So there are just many, many factors that play into that.
Okay.
Just a follow-up. I guess I'm confused a little bit. So the $64 million request was sent, then the first phase is merely mechanical and wouldn't address the space issues because they haven't been worked through as yet?
Well, maybe we ought to bring Representative Wassa up to the
table. Can Diane answer all the questions?
She's got some questions or issues about the planning that we thought was supposed to go on.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee, instead of doing the two steps here and figuring out where to jump in and where not to, just to give you a little background, Representative Winkler, you are correct in that in raising some of what was a big stumbling block moving forward. I was the chief author of the original bill back in 2005 to authorize the planning money and to start repairing the roof on the dome. And we actually had anticipated in the House the need for swing space. As you update the mechanicals in an old 100-year-old building, you actually have to move people out of that area. You can't just, set up scaffolding around people's desks. And the House is ready to step up and fund the Ford Building renovation as that swing space. There was actually a Ford Building renovation committee that I and Chairman Kahn and I don't know who else on this committee served on to look at sort of the future of the Ford Building. And while we looked at alternative uses, the cap board said, we're going to need swing space when we renovate the Capitol. And we said, wow, that's perfect. It's on campus. It's on the tunnel. And so there was a real interest in that. Unfortunately, there were some senators who hadn't yet gotten the word that renovation meant you have to move out of your office. And there was some consternation in different worldviews about who should move and where and how, and that sort of derailed efforts that year. It's sort of like a dance. And one step forward, two steps back sometimes. So, but the funding, but everyone agreed that the Capitol and its major worn out physical plant absolutely needs to be dealt with. We need to improve accessibility to people with disabilities. We need to deal with life safety issues. We do not have a smoke handling system. If there were a smoldering fire in one office, we wouldn't even get alerted very quickly. And so, you know, there was no disagreement on that. And so there was a thought that we would move forward with that, with the planning. Unfortunately, most of the assessment of need was done with the discussion only with people who are located in the Capitol building itself. And we all know that if everybody around the table doesn't feel like they're consulted and involved, you start to run into issues. And so when we were caught off guard with a very large, very ambitious proposal, the commissioner is correct, it addressed all the problems that have been identified, but it also created a lot of square footage and was a big price tag, and none of that price tag included addressing similar issues in other parts of the Capitol complex, including what do you do with the space here, what do you deal with our heating and ventilation issues that sometimes make some of us uncomfortable in these hearing rooms. And so the decision was made that we had to regroup and start to develop a common vision. And I think it was wise on the part of the House Senate group that was appointed, along with other interested members from administration, the CAP board, from the disability community, to say, you know, we need a North Campus plan. Because just addressing the security issues of the tunnel under the Capitol doesn't help if anyone can walk into the state office building and go down through our tunnel, and you have some of the same issues related to air handling and quality issues and whether or not we have the energy efficiency and those sorts of things. So the scope of the effort sort of got bigger, and then you had new initiatives coming in that sort of came into our last meeting. We only had four meetings. Our last meeting, we heard about light rail and its potential impact, and the plan that at that point was that it was going to totally eliminate the tunnel to administration. We had always seen north of the Capitol as an expansion zone. There had actually been plans in the past for a legislative office building there. There's been all kinds of planning on the north side, and all of a sudden, light rail was going to be at our back step. Changing everything, changing the grade, not allowing pedestrians in, and there was a sense of, whoa, wait a minute, we need to kind of factor all this stuff in so it all fits together. I must say I'm personally disappointed that the group has not met since November. I think our chairs have been busy with their other obligations, but the end result has been that we did not come to that joint collaborative plan that will really envision a long-term North Campus. And I think that's where I would like to encourage us to put the planning money into developing that North Campus plan with the Capitol renovation. But we should not in any way delay preserving the Capitol and starting the restoration. There has been no disagreement between the House and the Senate or anyone else on that committee about the priority to fix the leaking roof, to deal with things that put us at great risk of a major collapse. I mean, if one of these pipes broke and a major downpour this spring, the cost of renovating any part of the Capitol with its beautiful artwork is incredibly expensive, let alone perhaps taking out electrical systems that senators and others are dependent upon for their work, our house floor is dependent upon, you know, having the wiring work and not be sorted out by water problems. And so I think we need to ambitiously step forward with a major commitment to going forward on that. The life safety far beyond the $15 million that's sort of a, you know, a patch, the most critical ones that we know about and cross our fingers on the rest. While we still work on that common vision of what is the role of the state office building, what is the role of the Capitol, what is the role of the Ford building, and I think we need to, and this is what I'm trying to work on now before you have to make your final recommendations or the bonding committee, is there's expenditures related to what's going on with light rail that we need to deal with now. But the light rail planning, as you know, is working towards the February 27th deadline, and things are still in negotiations, so it's been kind of a moving target. So, I mean, I'm trying to be very honest about where things have been, why they evolved the way they did, but I think I speak for all of us on the committee in saying there is absolutely no disagreement about the need to give top priority to making sure that we do not have a major failure in a system in that beautiful building that we all have the honor to serve in. And I think that $15 million is not going to get us far enough to protecting ourselves from those kind of issues. It's an old building. Unexpected things happen. I live in a very old building and have learned to accept that as part of the risk. But I think when we know that we've got these kind of issues, we ought to step up.
I think you're hearing a request from Representative Loeffler and looks like Representative DeLaForest and probably some others to know what is the true minimum that we ought to put together to move in on this without that what we could do to get the kind of protective shell and to get the physical, the HVAC, the stuff that's supposed to be outside, and I guess if it's supposed to be those utility boxes are supposed to be outside on the north, and how that's going to fit in with the light rail. I understand that the light rail is going to be raised enough so that we don't lose the tunnel that was taken care of. But I think there might be some willingness to make the pitch for what we absolutely have to do in this, as long as we're not committed to, I think when this committee took the whistle with the architects, we were kind of favorably impressed with what we saw. But admittedly, we weren't thinking about the other planning that needed to be done. And it was the capital investment committee that actually went ballistic about the non-consultation. This committee is so much more nicer and less demanding, but it was the capital investment committee that kind of went ballistic about the not inclusion of the house in the planning and the discussions and those sorts of things. So I think we want to get to the point short of where that has to all occur.
Madam Chair and members, and
so it's probably a terrible mistake. You went with us first and we were kind of so nice and and cooperative, and then that totally unprepared, left you unprepared for the next step.
Madam Chair and members, I just want to confirm that in general, of course, I agree with what Representative Loeffler has characterized the meetings and conclusions. I think we're on the same page with that respect. In response to your request and Representative DeLaForest's request, the best of our ability to give an answer to that question, what would we have to do right now to stem the tide, to begin the effort of full restoration of the Capitol without yet committing ourselves to who moves where? We believe that that was presented in a four-phase plan, which is public record, which we did present to the working group in a brochure, which we'd be happy to provide to the members of the committee. Of course, it is not the governor's recommendation, so, but I can provide this information to you. It was done in consultation with the architects, so we believe it is the best that we can do in terms of scoping this thing so that we get started, but that we don't commit ourselves unnecessarily to decisions around space utilization that we would perhaps later regret.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess this is to Representative Loeffler, but is the $64 million initial number that Evan came up with in the range of what you think you're talking about as well? Is it consistent in that way, or is
no.
there a bigger range of numbers we could consider for the kind of process that Commissioner Badger described?
Madam Chair and Representative Winkler, I would prefer a larger figure, but I need to know. I'm researching as fast as I can, probably in the $75 to $85 million range, simply because this was really focused on the Capitol building itself. And I think to get the peace and harmony that we need and to really have a vision for where we're going, we really do need to have that kind of North Capitol plan. And it was at our very last meeting that we got information on the initial assessment of what was going on with LRT, which really kind of was like, oh my gosh, we have to make some adjustments for this. And that may mean that we're going to want to put those north vaults in on the north side of the Capitol and time them with LRT, and in order to really save on construction and disruption. The other thing is, even though there's going to be the tunnel, there is still going to be a lowered elevation across University for light rail to deal with the steepness of the hill. And there has been discussion, I know Justice Anderson of the Supreme Court is particularly passionate about this. He served on this committee, that we need to really fulfill Cass Gilbert's vision of a pedestrian access across universities to the north. If you think of where our constituents come for hearings, where they park to testify, oftentimes it's in those, that lot off past administration building. If you watch the traffic, people are crossing university at that point all the way. And we may need to make some expenditures. Maybe it's a pedestrian bridge. Maybe it's a plaza. I'm not sure what it is, to accommodate people safely crossing university at that point. And no one has costed that out yet. So there's some things that have emerged since that discussion that I can throw out numbers, but I'm not an engineer. And, but I think it's above where we started, simply because to seize the opportunity to do things cost effectively while we're digging up the University Avenue, while we're laying track, it would make sense to do that now rather than more expensively later.
Madam Chair, just a quick note. The 63.9 did include all the North Fault work. So if it would be done prior to the final laying of the track for light rail. And secondly, it also included money and planning for the North Campus redesign, including the use of the Ford Building for swing space. So it included the decision and design for whatever that swing space decision needed to be. So we envisioned... Yeah.
I assume that it would just be the pedestrian access that we might need to look at something.
You know, one of the issues that I was dealing with at a neighborhood meeting dealing with light rail is the whole concept of what you put into the basic plan and then what you put into the concept of what one calls mitigation afterwards. And I understand that one of the things that I've understood from that is that that mitigation concept is much, first of all, it doesn't go into that basic federal cost that we're trying to meet. And second of all, it's much more flexible of what kind of pots of money you can take it from and where you can get it. And there's, you know, sympathy from our representatives in Washington to help access that. So I guess one of the questions is, particularly as we're talking about this light rail approach on the north of the Capitol, is how much of what we're trying to do could be considered mitigation for the light rail now that the light rail is coming there.
Madam Chair and members, you may be interested to know that Representative Hausman has scheduled a hearing next week with the Met Council and the light rail designers, specifically to probe what is the impact of light rail on the state capitol. So that's the place, I think, where we can bring those issues up. So some of your members may be interested in that hearing. I don't remember the exact specifics of it, but it is scheduled for next week.
There was something that I heard in one of these tidbits that you pick up at meetings, that there was an original proposal that the light rail going from the Capitol was going to go down 12th Street, and it's now been pushed over to Roberts, 12th Avenue, it's now been pushed over to Roberts because someone on the CAF board objected to the fact that they could see overhead wires. Is that true, or what's the issue with that? Is it better to go down 12th or better to go down Roberts, or what?
Well, Madam Chair, I can't speak to that. I think you probably should talk to the CAP board. But suffice it to say, I believe it's been going to go down Roberts Street for some time. And actually, that is, I think, to our advantage. We have a significant concentration of state government employees over on Roberts, as well as Regents Hospital, which is served there. So they're doing their market analysis of where the ridership exists. I believe they find a significant concentration of riders over on Roberts Street. I don't believe the aesthetics were a factor in that.
Oh, okay. Is that... CAP board person seems to be retreating, so I apologize for bringing up unsubstantiated rumors from the depths of Minneapolis. So, okay.
And Chair, shall we proceed to the next topic?
Yes. Anyone? Diane, is there anything else that you're going to want to say for this?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I would just like to say I'm pleased that you also, at least those who have spoken up, understand the complexity of what we're dealing with and share the vision of being good stewards of the properties that we manage. And we'll keep working on this to develop a plan that I think will make your work as well as everyone else's work easier in terms of having a bigger vision for how do we improve not only the Capitol building, but the function of the entire North Campus.
Okay. And Chair members, the next project is our statewide CAPR request. As I mentioned, this is a typical biennial request from the Department of Administration on behalf of all state agencies. It is a statewide fund that's centrally managed by admin to deal with emergencies and taking care of hazardous material abatements as they occur. Our current CAPR balance is under $400,000, and it's at a time when our infrastructure is aging and weather is creating greater demands. This past year, we had an enormous number of requests for CAPR. The flooding that occurred in southeast Minnesota, we provided a fair amount of money to the DNR to deal with that. We had a number of corrections projects that ran into abatement issues with asbestos, and we took care of that out of CAPRA. We also used some of CAPRA money on the mitigation work that went on with the DOT building. So this, again, it's a statewide fund managed by us, and we're at about $389,000 right now left of the 06 appropriation, and we're asking for $3 million to essentially replenish this account for the next couple of years.
Okay. Any questions?
And then our final project, Madam Chair members, is a request of $500,000 to undertake a pre-design for a state emergency operations center. The existing facility, as Mr. Badgerow mentioned earlier, is in downtown St. Paul. It is really unsuitable for the purpose of a state emergency operations center. What this particular request would do is allow for a pre-design to go into a state-owned emergency operations center. Some of the federal location issues that have come up with the location as it is it's in an area with high-rise buildings, which doesn't meet federal requirements. It should be at least 80 feet away from parking, and it sits in a location that has parking right there on site underground. It should be away from congested traffic areas. Obviously, in a downtown area, that isn't achievable. And the site really meets none of these requirements, and on several occasions, this particular location has experienced some flooding. Potential benefits to an ownership position in this regard is just what we look at normally, and that's a long-term cost control and availability issue with state-owned space. That takes that off the table. We believe we gain improved infrastructure on technology. It would be a chance to move on sustainable design strategies and reduce operating costs. And there is the slight potential that going through the pre-design, we may identify opportunities to partner with the Department of Military Affairs in the emergency operations planning that they do. So, again, this is pre-design money for a new state emergency operations center.
And I assume had you been in New York, you would not have recommended putting it in the World Trade Center.
Okay. And that works our way through the list of projects that we have for 2008.
Okay. More comments or questions?
Maybe it's a question for Representative Winkler. I serve on the Working Group for Terrorism and Disaster Preparedness that he chairs. And we've had a great deal of discussion, good discussion over the past few months about these emergency operations centers. And once again, sensing maybe a little bit of a disconnect, and we're talking about appropriating money for new emergency operation centers, at least as I divine the discussions that we've had with stakeholders and others, we're not exactly sure even philosophically about what we could do with emergency operation centers. Whether the military affairs out of it have one, should they have one, should public safety also have one, should it be state-led, should major cities have one? I guess it's not so much a question as a comment that we've had a great deal of discussion, and now I see an appropriation to move forward with one.
Well, of course, we don't know if we're going to fund the appropriation yet, but one of the issues, and I don't know if you guys have some set of things that ought to be looked at, but we can certainly put constraints on spending anything to have those decisions made, if they're ready to be made. Representative Wilson.
Madam Chair, Representative De La Forest is entirely correct. The City of Minneapolis also will have a bonding request this session for an emergency operations center. There is a question about what's the best policy for who should have them and where. During the 35W bridge collapse response, the emergency operations center was a small conference room in the City Hall building in Minneapolis. It was not well suited for the task at all. I think that the Rocco Forte, the person who has really led that effort, has suggested that cities of the first class should have these types of centers and that they should be distributed rather than having one central location. However, everything that they've said also about the location of the state's EOC in downtown St. Paul is correct, and I believe that this is in Arden Hills possibility. But I guess I would be interested in getting a little bit more information about how this fits in with the overall EOC plan, if there is one, between state and local stakeholders.
As you can imagine, we are really carrying this on behalf of the Department of Public Safety, and we'd be happy to bring them with us. We're their landlord, so to speak, in that we do negotiate their leases, and so this would be simply a pre-design. There has been no location that has been identified. This would help determine that, and it would also help answer the question as to whether it ought to be co-located with the military affairs, emergency operations. There are efficiencies to be able to do that. So I think that's what the money is actually for, is to study the need, the scope, and the co-location possibility.
Pointing out something else, it's obviously slightly different, but the same issue of co-location and versus who should do what, is that there are all kinds of requests for forensic centers. From Minneapolis, I just saw one from Anoka, from all sorts of things. And I think a whole sense of inadequacy with the St. Paul Center. And again, I don't know what the answer is. I don't know what the answer is, but I sure think it ought to be discussed before we start putting them all over the place. And we ought to talk about the fact, and particularly, you know, I guess one of the things that my guess is, just from having followed the subject from some time, that the kind of machinery that we're going to use for things like DNA analysis is going to make the wars that we've had, the hardware wars that we've had in hospitals, look like child's play for that. And the question is, if you're going to have some really expensive types of machines, how much point does it make to put separate ones in all places in the state rather than having one that will be going 24 hours a day, and arrangements with all the various parties as to how you deal with priorities and so forth?
Madam Chair, then maybe to the point, I guess, is that we should have some specific direction if we do an appropriate, or if we do recommend project scoping $500,000, that we recommend some kind of coordination with other stakeholders involved to determine what makes the most sense for how to do this. I don't know if that language, presumably that's part of the thought process, but sometimes a little bit of a mandate helps generate discussion.
Yeah. Okay. And does your committee, do you have any kind of report that we ought to hear, or what's happening with that?
We do not have a report here. I mean, we've generated a huge amount of information, which, interestingly, there aren't experts in the legislature currently on these issues, including the members of the Public Safety Committee. I think one of the things that we will do is to generate a report, we certainly could help identify resources who could come in and give good context for some of the things we're talking about.
Okay. I thought I was being slighted for my vote in the previous committee. along with the Emergency Operations Centers and the Forensic Science labs being spread out all over, also the just in general the public safety training centers that are being proposed to. And the legislative auditor had done a report about kind of the regional versus central type thing, so I encourage people to read that too. But I'm going to just chime in and say I agree that we need to have a serious discussion about what we're going to do here. We did fund 15 new BCA scientists to help move that along, and now we're, you know, going to decide whether we're going to put things regionally, whether it's EOCs or whether it's safety training centers or forensic labs. So I think it merits a lot of thorough vetting and deciding on what direction we want to go.
Okay. Any other comments? Okay. It was pointed out to me that although we heard from Representative Loeffler, we never really dealt with her bill that is before us. I'm not so familiar with having the fact that every time we have a funding request, we actually have to have a bill that has to get moved along, too. So, we have, I don't know if there's anything else that you want to say with respect to House File 2212, but Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I would just say that we're continuing to explore the options and see if we need any specific language that you might consider when you make your final recommendations next week, but I always welcome a positive endorsement by the committee of moving the bill forward, and I understand that you'll be putting things together in a package next week. Is that correct?
Okay. The motion that I would make at this point is that House File 2212 be recommended to pass and considered for laying over in our recommendations to capital investment next week. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks. That concludes our official business for today. Oh, yes. Just a question. The next meeting, if you note on the agenda, February 19th, 2:15 in this room. We're not going to be doing Representative Winkler's bill. There's another committee, it turns out, it has to go to on its journey through the House. So we'll probably be doing that on a special meeting, February 20th, the next day, 1/2 hour after session. So you'll get a notice that says that.
What, sir?
The Representative Winkler's
bill. Okay. So it's not on bill.
It's not. It won't be on the 19th.
Okay.
Okay. In the adjournment.